Now, the man behind the voice you've been hearing for decades associated with Valley sports teams. It's time for That's So Money with Arizona Diamondbacks and ASU broadcaster Jeff Munn.
Well, hi there. Yes, there still is a That's So Money podcast, even though the guy that does the podcast hasn't done the podcast in a while. It's good to catch up with you, and I apologize for not getting back with you sooner. The grind of the baseball season and the daily things that I do each day to get ready for a baseball game have kind of taken me away from other things that I enjoy doing, including this podcast. And I guess what we ought to do, first of all, is give you a little insight into why my day is so tied up with things with baseball. One of the things that you learn to do as a broadcaster, and this is true whether you're doing play-by-play or especially for talk show host, and I know this from having done Brad's show, and Brad does this on a daily basis, is you have to read. You have to read a lot of stuff. And what I do each day is I try to read as much baseball material as I possibly can. And I can't get to everything that I want to do, but I devote as much time as I can to reading about baseball material every day, literally right up until the time it's time for me to go to the ballpark. Today, and I'm taping this on Tuesday the 13th, I got done with my reading early because there weren't that many games last night. So, free time. Let's catch up on a few things. I want to just, there's been so much going on in sports that's not worth discussing. Donald Sterling, et cetera, and we're not going to concentrate on that. Instead, I'd like to just take a couple minutes. I do want to talk to you about my impressions of the NBA playoffs to this point. A couple things strike me about the NBA playoffs so far and about the NBA in general. I think this is a great time for the NBA in terms of the basketball, and it was something that was driven home to me several years ago when I had the great honor of filling in for Al McCoy on a number of Suns games. What struck me, and I don't think it was true 8-9 years ago when I left the Suns as their PA announcer, but it's especially true today. Every team in the NBA, even the worst teams in the NBA, have a player that when you prepare for a game against that team, you have to be concerned with. Philadelphia had a miserable season. Michael Carter Williams gets the Rookie of the Year. You have to be concerned if you're playing the Sixers. How do we defend Michael Carter Williams? How do we keep Philadelphia from doing certain things when they're on defense, when Michael Carter Williams is on the floor? And you can name any team in the league, and coaches will tell you there's always at least one player that can be a game changer. And I think that's a tremendous statement about where the NBA is today. It's very true. And now you're in the playoffs where teams have multiple players who fit into that category. The other thing that's interesting about the playoffs, and I was reminded of this today when I heard some people talking about John Wall's struggles in the playoffs. There is a difference to preparing for a team in the regular season as opposed to the playoffs. When you're, let's just take the Suns, for example. When you're on the East Coast on a road trip, you might play teams in a back-to-back situation. You know, let's say you play on a Wednesday night, and then you fly to another city and play on a Thursday night. It gives you very little time to prepare for that second team. You don't have that much time to prepare for the first one, but even less time to prepare for the team on the back end of that back-to-back. And in one-game situations, great players can often gain a little advantage by facing a team that hasn't had all the prep time it would like to have. In the playoffs, it's different, and that's where the real challenge of the playoffs are. Teams not only have a couple of days before game one in most cases, maybe not, but ideally they have time to prepare for you as an opponent. The other thing is that they know they're going to get another game a couple nights later. And you always hear about adjustments in the playoffs, and I think it's especially true with certain players. If you ask yourself, why can't they perform in the playoffs like they do the regular season, teams have more time to figure out how to defend those players. And it is a game of adjustments. You hear that phrase so often, and for very good reason. The other thing about basketball, and it's true in the NBA, and it's true just about at any level, coaches can talk to you without end about defense. That's not to say they don't pay attention to offense, but they're much more concerned with how their teams defend, and it gives them more wrinkles in terms of worry lines and gray hairs than anything a team does offensively. Greatest example I saw that was at the Olympics that I was blessed enough to announce in 1996 in Atlanta. Just about every team, regardless of where they came from, wherever on the globe, their coaches would be fanatical about the way their players defended, but then when they had the ball on offense, they would literally sit down and be quiet. And it is. It's just that's the coaches. That's a universal language with coaches. You go up to a coach and say, "What concerns you about your team?" You're going to hear a lot more about the way they defend than the way they attack. And so NBA teams in these best of seven series, they're going to spend an awful lot of time between games worrying about how to defend players. And that's why you see in certain instances, not all. Obviously, the Brooklyn Nets haven't quite figured out how to slow down LeBron James, and that's because nobody has. But he drops 49 on the Nets in game number 4 on Monday night, and that tells you right there that not all players are slowed down by the adjustments teams make on them in playoff series. All right, other things. ASU baseball is heading into the home stretch of its season. And we haven't talked a lot about ASU baseball on this podcast. I do remember that somewhere around one of the first podcasts I did, I talked a little bit about ASU's decision to move baseball to Phoenix Municipal Stadium. The last scheduled game for ASU at Packard Stadium is coming up in a couple of weeks against a non-conference opponent, Abilene Christian. And I thought it would be good to kind of go over again my own personal thoughts, because I have a vested interest in Packard Stadium. I worked there for 12 years as their PA announcer. And it's a very, very special place to me. But I'll be the first to admit that it's time for ASU to do something, and they did it by moving to Phoenix Municipal Stadium. It's not ideal. A lot of people I talk to are very upset about the fact that they're leaving campus, even though they're only moving basically a mile away, and you can reach Phoenix Muni from campus via light rail. It is a little bit of a walk, but it's not that bad. It's also a much bigger stadium in terms of seating capacity. There's a lot more shaded area, so when they play day games at this time of year, there's not, you know, you don't have any protection at Packard right now. There's just very little shade in that ballpark. And look, let's be honest, they're going to be able to sell beer. All that tied in, it should add to the attendance figures and really boost things for ASU as a program. They also get the complete run of the ballpark. They're not sharing it with a spring training team. The A's are moving to Hohokam Park in Mesa. ASU can house their entire baseball operation there. I would have loved to have seen them come up with a solution to stay at Packard. But consider this. A refurbishing of Packard Stadium, which not only was desired but absolutely necessary, would have caused two things. Number one, they were going to have to play at least a year away from Packard while the renovations were taking place. And in reality, they would have had to expand the ballpark to get it back up to a seating capacity it used to have. Back in the 70s and 80s and into the early 90s, they had bleachers down the respective left and right field lines, and the seating capacity was over 9,000. And ASU in the 80s used to sell out that ballpark on occasion, U of A series, regionals, what have you. But if they were going to do that now, because they've taken that area and they've put in an infield diamond they can use for practice, they now have batting tunnels and tons more training facilities for the players, in addition to a clubhouse. They used to, in the old days of Packard, the baseball players dressed out in a locker room at the basketball arena and would come across campus to play games. Well, that's all changed. So if you're going to expand the seating capacity of Packard Stadium, you're going to have to move the stands back. You're going to have to chew up some more land. And you're probably going to have to cut into the land that is allocated for Sun Angel Track Stadium. So it was just plain impractical to consider any kind of renovation to Packard, because they simply can't afford to take away parking spaces or land that's used at the track stadium. Okay, that's settled. They did talk for a while to the Cubs about Riverview. That wouldn't have worked either. I know that they were close on a deal, but in reality, think about the month of March. How often would ASU have been able to play games at Riverview Park or Cubs Park at Riverview? Not that often. The Cubs would have gotten first say on all the available dates. The Cubs would get first say on things that were needed in terms of equipment and amenities at the ballpark. So it wouldn't have been a good situation. The Muni situation is better. And it is painful to see a stadium that has meant so much to the hearts and souls of ASU fans be torn down. But it was simply time, and there was nothing else the school could do. Actually, I'm a little bit more distraught over their decision to move their golf operations to Papago Park and use the land that Karsten Golf Course currently sits on and use that for development. I'm not saying they're wrong to do it. It just breaks my heart to see it happen. I was with ASU when they broke ground on Karsten Golf Course. And I spent one semester of my college experience as the sports information contact for men's golf when a young man by the name of Phil Mickelson was part of the golf team. If you're not a golfer, you're not really going to understand this, but Karsten Golf Course is a really special place. It's never going to get listed among the top golf courses in the Valley. Not when you have the TPC at Scottsdale or some of the other terrific courses that house the professional events, whether it's LPGA, the Champions Tour, the LPGA. Karsten Golf Course isn't going to get mentioned in that conversation. But if you play golf and if you've played that course, I'm pretty certain you figure it's one of the more interesting courses to play in the Valley. It's not a demanding course in terms of length. There are a couple of long par fives. But it's a course that's playable for just about any skill level because it emphasizes accuracy over distance. And it was a Pete Dye design course, Scottish Links design with lots of hills. And I would have loved to have seen PGA golfers in their prime play that course just to see how they would attack it. The plan is, and the Republic had a story on this yesterday, that sometime down the road, probably within the next year or two, ASU will close down Karsten Golf Course and redevelop that land. And again, I'm not being critical of the school for doing that. There's obviously a lot of thought that goes into these decisions. ASU will move their golf operations to Papago Park, the golf course that's located near the Phoenix Zoo, near Phoenix Municipal Stadium. In a lot of respects, it's okay to make that move. I want to make sure I choose my words correctly, because Papago is a very challenging course. It's kind of flown under the radar for a number of years. And municipal courses a lot of times don't get the credit they deserve for being good tests of golf. You remember all the fuss that was made several years ago when the U.S. Open was played at a municipal course outside of New York City. Muni courses a lot of times just aren't thought of as great challenging golf courses, but Papago Park is. And so it will be a good spot for ASU to put its golf operations. And again, it's fairly close to campus. I just hate to see ASU lose a real jewel. Not too many schools around the country can boast of an on-campus golf course, and one that is so challenging and so enjoyable to play. The other thing, and this is not a commercial for Karsten, because frankly, if you don't get out there and play pretty soon, you're not going to get the chance. But they offered also really good service. They took care and take care of the golfers that play there, whether they're playing in a collegiate golf tournament, a sponsored scramble, or just a couple guys out trying to get in 18 holes. It's a terrific place to go, and I hate to see it go away, but these things do happen, and I just hope that the move is beneficial to ASU's golf programs, as I think the move of baseball will be. I really do think that once people get settled in and see what they have for ASU baseball at Phoenix Municipal Stadium, I think it will be a much easier thing for a lot of us old-time Sun Devils to deal with. As far as ASU baseball's postseason chances, I'm a little bit confused why some members of the media have been so concerned about whether or not they're going to make the field. I think they're okay. Maybe there was a little bit of nervous anxiety after they lost the opener of their series with Oregon. But coming back to win two games against the Ducks kind of puts ASU in a better spot. I do think that they're pretty safe to make the field as long as they take care of their business in their final seven games, eight games actually, UNLV, and they're playing that tonight as we speak. three-game series at home with Utah, which is having kind of a rough season in the Pac-12. The game with Abilene Christian, and then a three-game series to wrap things up on the regular season at Washington State. As long as ASU takes care of their business, they're in the field. They're not going to host, and that's unfortunate, but it was bound to happen given their record. But they've also played one of the most, if not the most, demanding schedule in college baseball this year. And sooner or later, and this is a subject that comes up in basketball, and it's going to come up in the new college football playoff, strength of schedule should matter. As fans, we don't want to see our teams go out and beat up on inferior competition game after game after game. It may be fun to some people to see ASU blow somebody out of the water by a ridiculous score, but it doesn't really prove anything. One of the things about ASU football in the 70s under Frank Cush was that it was tough for them to try to entice teams when they were in the WAC to come out and play them, so they played in a number of non-conference games against inferior competition. They would blow them out by 50 points, but at the end of the day, what have you really proved? And admittedly, there were a handful of fans that really liked the 50-0 blowouts. But again, you want to know how you do against the best. Well, ASU baseball has shown what they can do against the best consistently this year. I'll tell you something else, and I'm not the only person to feel this way, but I guess I'll be the first one to say it out loud. If ASU, as they should, gets into the NCAA tournament, they can make some noise. They're very strong on the mound. And in the NCAA baseball tournament, you basically need two hot pitchers. And if they're both throwing well, and as long as ASU keeps winning, or any team under that category, you can make a lot of progress. In fact, you could find yourself in Omaha. And am I saying that ASU is going to go to the College World Series? I don't know if I want to go quite out on that shaky a limb. But it wouldn't surprise me to see ASU pull off an upset in a regional and at least make somebody sweat in a super regional if their pitching holds up. They're very strong on the mound. The issue all year for ASU has been their ability to come up with big hits when they needed them and to field the ball cleanly. They've struggled at times in the field. But they can pitch. And in the postseason, in the NCAA, it's just like the major leagues. In the postseason, pitching and defense wins. All right, I will promise I won't wait so long before the next time you and I visit. Obviously, we want you to visit sports360az.com as often as possible. You might see me on Brad's show again here in the not-too-distant future. But we will have a new podcast soon, I promise. Thanks for being patient with me. I'll talk to you soon.